VentureCast.
It's not about the corner office. It's not about the fancy title. It's not even about the extra money. Responsible leadership is about taking care of those who choose to follow you, and that care takes on many forms. This podcast is dedicated to bringing you the best guests with the best advice to help you succeed in that endeavor. The Responsible Leadership Podcast is a production of The Leadership Phalanx. To find out more about me and what I do, visit leadershipphalanx.com. That's leadership, PHALANX.com. And now, on to today's show. All right, listeners, hello and welcome to this episode of the Responsible Leadership Podcast. I've got an outstanding guest for you this week, like I do every single week on this show, Mr. John Robertson. John, thanks for being with us today.
Actually, it's my honor, and I'm really looking forward to having a conversation with you, Earl.
Oh, I am looking forward to having this conversation here, not only just because of those beautiful, rich tones that we just heard come across the air there already, but because, listeners, what I want you to know about John is he is inspired and driven by his values. John acts as a facilitator, coach, and guide for his clients as they test, discover, and expand what they can do. He uses concrete, verifiable processes to help them achieve demonstrable, solution-focused results. Remaining faithful to his passions and principles, John invests himself in his vocation without reservation. He provides spirit-filled, insightful guidance that his clients use to amplify their lives and their businesses. John truly provides leadership people can follow through storms, and that's reflected in his book, Run Toward the Roar, which is something we'll talk quite a bit about during this conversation. But before we get into that conversation, I want to start you off where I start off all of my guests. When you hear the words responsible leadership, what does that look like to you?
And as much as this sounds like I'm blowing my own horn, it's actually the way I believe leadership can be responsible. Number one, what are we passionate about? Because that, which is the premise behind the book, Passio Fidelis, but we'll get into that. When we are for something, we're not always reacting to what a lot of people tell us, well, I don't like this and what they're against. So passion is what we're for, and that is our values. And that determines our authority, and the lowest form of authority is leadership, is a position rather. So the highest form of leadership is personhood and who we are. And so when I think of that term, the concept of responsible leadership, it is the person who knows what he or she is for and is willing to walk that out despite the chirping from the stands and live so that they finish well.
I like that. I like that a lot. And Passio Fidelis, that really stuck out to me. And I do want to talk about that a little bit more because, you know, as United States Marine, you know, our kind of motto is Semper Fidelis.
Yep.
So, you know, let's talk about that Passio Fidelis. Like, what does that mean?
Okay. You know, by the way, great. I'm glad you asked that question. But on a serious note, I actually was thinking of using the term Semper Fidelis, but a lot of people know it as a Marines thing. And I didn't, right. It's not about copyright. It's about the ethos behind it. Mm-hmm. Semper meaning always. Fidelis is the root word of fidelity, of faithfulness, of loyalty. Right. And in order to run toward the roar, in order to be able to thrive, in order to transform crisis, which can be changed for some people, but in order to transform crisis into the opportunity, you and I have to know what we are going to be fidelis for, faithful, loyal fidelity. And that is our values. And passio is the root word of passion. So when we determine our passio fidelis, what we are passionately faithful towards, that's what leaks out when we're in hot water. And that's how I refer to crisis or change. It's a hot water teabag moment. What's inside? If you want to find out what's important to a person or an organization, put them in hot water. What's inside always leaks out.
Yeah.
And the theme of being a responsible leader, that whole premise of responsible leadership, it is being proactive beforehand to say, okay, when I'm up to my neck in alligators, what do I want people to see leak out of me? Not values posted on some website somewhere or what we tell people, but the real stuff. You know what? If you ask me to choose between sitting beside the soccer pitch at one of my kids' games, not competitive level, just a normal quote-unquote house league level, or attending a meeting, you might be sadly disappointed that I choose my kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And I love, well, I love everything you said there, because it reminded me, you know, and I've talked about this a little bit on this show before, but I like that teabag analogy. I've heard you kind of mention that on some of the shows I listen to. My mm-hmm. listeners know I do my due diligence and listen to guests, other appearances on shows. And I love that analogy because it reminded me of the final stage of Marine Corps boot camp. We have to go through something called the crucible, the purifying moment.
Yes.
And you know, for those who haven't heard or don't know, the gist of that is it's a, you know, 3-day event. You march somewhere in the neighborhood of 65 miles over the course of those 3 days. You get about 3 hours of sleep. You have 1.5 MREs over the course of that 3 days and that 65 miles of marching. But through that time frame, while you're sleep deprived, you're food deprived, they put you through all of these mental and physical tests. And what they don't tell you at the time and what you're not thinking about, because up until that point, everything has been about passing the physical and mental tests, is it's about how you react in the moment. They're judging you on do you break down? Do you start sniping at each other? Do you start yelling and screaming at each other? They're gauging that. How well do you hold up under that pressure and still problem solve and keep the team together and look out for one another? That's the true test. And what and great, about there's they're pouring the hot water on you at that moment.
Yeah, well, what a great, and I remember high school and university science. What a great visual of the crucible.
Yeah.
And that's one of the challenges right now is we live in a time where many people are more than willing to tell us what they don't like, what they don't agree with, what they're against. Crucibles define what we are for. Those hot water teabag moments reveal what's inside.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and I think that's one thing that I really loved about your book, and I loved about the title of your book is you know, I say this a lot on here because when I see a book design that I really love, I've got to give it credit. And the visual for the cover of this book, folks, Run Toward the Roar, and you've got this lion kind of chomping on the roar. But it was one of these things that we would say, you know, that we got kind of beat in our heads again, not just in boot camp, but all throughout our Marine Corps careers. Is courage isn't the absence of fear. Courage is embracing the presence of fear and acting anyway.
Well, if we were in a different culture, I would say something like, amen, brother, you preach it. And because what you put your finger on, and that's where I keep calling him Tom Collins, but that's a drink, the author of the book, Jim Collins.
Yeah.
Is in Good to Great, he quotes Admiral Stockdale, and it's that Stockdale paradox of, you know, we got some brutal realities to confront. However, we will prevail in the end. And the way I teach leadership, and so whether you call it keynote or plenary, whatever, the speaking part is getting people to stop thinking about leadership as a program or check mark or letters after one's name. And it's that refiner's fire, the crucible, to say, if we go through this river, what do we want on the other side of this refiner's river, this river of fire? What do we want on the other side? What's the impurities burned away? And as a useless bit of trivia, but it illustrates it perfectly. Do you know how they used to smelt, I guess the process is. Do you know how the silversmith used to smelt silver?
No, tell me.
So what they used to do, and I'm not a geology type person. So whatever the product is that silver was in, they would put it in, to use your term, a crucible and fire underneath. And then the way it worked is all the impurities would burn to the surface, boil to the surface. And the silversmith would skim the gunk off the top. And after enough of that, the silversmith would let it cool down and look into the pot. And if the reflection was not perfectly clear, it would go back into the fire and burn away more impurities. What does it mean to be that kind of leader that people trust and follow and respect, even when they don't always like us? It means we have done crucible or fire time so that what they see reflected in us and through us is exactly what we wanted them to see, even if they don't like us.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. No, that is that. I like that. I hadn't heard that view of the crucible that way. I mean, but no, that is great. I mean, because it is. I mean, and that is a very big piece of leadership responsibility. Is, you know, because I talk about introspection and improvement. That's one of the shields of the phalanx that I talk about, is introspection and improvement. And that's what you're talking about, is going through that process over and over again, and improving each one of those firings in the crucible. And I just want to take a quick second to, you know, give a shout out to Admiral Stockdale there, because I want to say it was like way back in episode 3 or 4, I had the complete honor of interviewing Colonel Lee Ellis, who was a prisoner at the Hanoi Hilton. And okay. I think Admiral Stockdale is maybe the most underrated leader of the last 100 years that sadly too many people know nothing about.
Well, and isn't that, I mean, this is a perfect illustration of that whole ethos around leadership, because that whole Vietnam U.S. dynamic, what I'm not getting into it, but there's such polarized perspectives on it that when we have people of incredible caliber that are not Chuck Norris or Rambo or any of these people,
right,
that there is a quality that those environments reveal. I mean, we can go back to World War II with what's his name? Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm. You know, he was kind of a nobody. Go back hundreds of years and you get a Lincoln who failed numerous elections, became president.
Right. Well, go back to George Washington.
George Washington. I mean, yeah.
He was a failed military commander until he succeeded.
And what you're putting your finger on in those analogies is, as a leader that I want people to trust, respect, and follow me, I have to define what I am for, even if nobody notices.
Right.
And right now, that's a huge stone in the shoe for so many leaders. And I mean, Earl, let me just put it out there. Question that I ask, and I ask it every time I can, so I'm going to do it to you. How do you want people to describe you non-physically?
Yeah. You know, That's a great question. And I've had people ask me that question before, and I boil it down to one word. For me, that one word is integrity.
Hmm.
That's how I want people to describe me. If they said nothing else about me and they said Earl had integrity, I would be a happy person.
And this is where we're kind of reading off the same song sheet or singing or whatever it is, but off the same sheet, because if we look at the etymology of the word integrity, it comes from the Latin, and I'm not a linguistic person, but it is a number that is only divisible by one, and it is self. It is that, hence why we have successive integers. And, you know, a person who says one thing and does it is that kind of leader that, you know what, I know you got my back, even if I don't want to do Friday night pizza and wings with you.
Right. And that is, I love the way you put that, because that's exactly what I've said to people. Like, I've had people ask me before, it's like, Earl, what do you think? And my response is usually like, okay, before I answer that, do you really want to know what I think?
Yeah.
Because it may not be what you want to hear, but it's what I think you need to hear.
Absolutely. And so this goes to, and so what happens with crisis or change? And part of why I use those two terms together is change can be a crisis for some people. Mm-hmm. But one of the most important themes to be mindful of is the event is never the real crisis.
Yes.
And I can go, and I'm not anything close to your training, but I can go to most of the, you know, military personnel I know, their definition of crisis is way beyond the general population's. Like, they're not even on the same book when it comes to what qualifies as a crisis. And go ahead.
No, I just wanted to hit on that right there, right? Because that is one of the reasons why, and John, you just hit on a beautiful revelation right there, right? Most people's definition of crisis is kind of distorted a little bit, right? And this is why history, I think, is such an important topic that we do a terrible job of teaching, because one of the things that they did was they beat military history into our heads, not because they wanted us to know the history so much, but it was like, when you understand what humans have been through, you know, when you understand what we have done and what we have accomplished, a paper jam and a computer is just no big deal.
That's the term that gets thrown around, is it's truly a first world problem.
Right. You know, so yeah, go ahead. I mean, I didn't really want to interrupt there, but I wanted to really kind of build on that, because you're right. I mean, those things, like when we talk about, like, what is a problem? What is a crisis today? Oh, the battery on my cell phone died. That's not, yes, it's a big deal, right? Because maybe your kids are at school and they may need to get a hold of you. Yes, it is an issue, but there's a solution to it. You plug it in. It's not a crisis, right?
And so the easiest way to teach around crisis, there's four elements that I point out to people. Number one, it's unexpected. Number two, it's a threat to our goals. And number three, it impacts our norm. Those are most people's definition of a crisis. But it's the fourth one that sets it apart. And the fourth factor or element of crisis is that point when the status quo is no longer an option and change has to happen. And if change is not required, then it's just a failure.
Yeah. Yeah. Go deeper in that, because I like that. Go deeper into that. If change is not required, it's just a failure.
And so therefore, if we want to set up a potato picking farm, and you know, we try and get it set up and we get the rows done and we get the hills done and we get everything planted. And for whatever reason, it fails. Okay, well, we tried it, it didn't work. On the other hand, if you and I do all the same thing and we fertilize, we weed, we prune, we do all the things that are required and it doesn't work, then we can step back and say, okay, what was it about this potato stuff that didn't work? Okay, well, we're trying to plant it in a culture, in a climate that doesn't support potato growth. Therefore, change is required. On the other hand, if I have to plant potatoes and grow them in this area and it doesn't grow, then it's a failure. You know, there's no point crying over spilt milk.
Yeah. Yeah. I work with, I like that analogy because I remember there was, I live in Indiana, and at one point in time, I lived in the northern part of the state. And what a lot of people don't realize is in southern Michigan, on the western coast, on Lake Michigan, there's a significant number of orchards along the coast. Huh. And there was this one farm. They grew a particular type of peach. I don't remember what type of peach it is now. But there was this one year they had an early frost come in and it wiped out something like 70-80% of the orchards. And they were going through the process. The farmers were going through the process of applying for aid. But there was this one farmer, he refused to apply for aid. And it was holding up the process for the other farmers, right? And so it turned into this whole big deal where he was interviewed. And one of the reporters asked him, says, I think his name was Herb Teichman, if I remember right. I said, Herb, why are you not going to apply for aid? He said, look, he goes, it's this simple. He goes, we know the business that we're in. We know the dangers. He goes, if I go to the horse track and I bet on the wrong horse, I don't get to apply for aid to get my bet covered. Wow. And he goes,
yeah,
that, yeah. And that was it. It was that simple for him. Like he knew the dangers of the profession he chose. And for him, that was just the cost of doing business was this orchard getting wiped out. He didn't understand that.
What a great visual of responsible leadership, Earl.
Yeah.
You know, like, think about the ethos behind, if I'm only going to try things that, number one, can't fail, but if it does fail, I'll get whatever, VC funding or some kind of aid. Go back to, what is real courage? What is real responsibility? What is the crucible?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the key behind reframing crisis as an opportunity. Crisis can be that opportunity to say, okay, what was is not an option. Do I take the best and forget the rest? Can I go back to what you were sharing? Can I learn from history? What have other people done? Because I'm not the first person who's ever tried to do this, ever. I might be differently in how I'm doing it, but I'm not the first person. What can I learn from history? And then when I get a Charlie horse from these moments, what am I going to do to define a refinable new norm?
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, those are outstanding questions. Those are outstanding questions for people to think on. And I think that's a good point of contemplation, to take a quick break and pay some bills and we can pick up on that moment on the other side of the commercial break. How's that sound?
Perfect.
There we go. All right, folks, we're going to go into commercial break here real quick, and we're going to be back on the other side and continue our conversation with John Robertson. All right, here we are back with John Robertson. And on the other side of that commercial break here, he gave us some questions for contemplation. We were talking about change. We're talking about crisis. And, you know, that's been a big point for me on this show, especially here in the last few episodes. And a quote that I've shared quite a few times goes unattributed. And I'm not sure if you've heard this one or not, John, but it goes, change is changing faster than change has ever changed before. It's true. And it's only picking up at a rapid pace. It's like the snowball rolling downhill, right? Change is just getting bigger and faster and taking out more things as it goes downhill, which is why I think your book and your questions are so important, because change can lead to crisis. Crisis can lead to change. They can build off of one another, and guiding people through those questions and answering them and how they take those moments and turning opportunities are often the difference makers in whether an organization continues existing, right?
And that's the key, is even if, well, I'll go back to the analogy you were sharing, even if I apply for funding, I may continue to exist. But does that mean anybody wants to be there? Is it thriving? Does anybody want to do business? And part of defining that refinable new norm requires growth. You know, so when I was kind of university college bound, this is what my new norm was defined as. Graduating, this is what it is. Married, this is what it is. In business, this is what success means for me. And if you and I, and in North America, it's called an end zone in football. If we clarify our end zone, then we can build our 1 in 10 plan to keep growing forward. And therefore, crisis or change can be that catalyst. And whether it be a hot water tea bag, a river of fire, or crucible, it can be that catalyst to spur us to the next level, or we can allow it to take us out of the game. Both are options. I prefer people to find a way to stay in the game and reframe it. A beautiful illustration of this is I was doing some work with a business owner, and he took over another business portfolio. We did a whole bunch of work around his values, and there was a couple pieces of areas where, because he was conflict adverse, he super guy, but very detailed oriented, which probably a good thing considering he was in the finance field, but he was challenging with that stone in the shoe stuff. So we did some of the work, and I did some of the stuff with his people, his team, and that he works with. And I just got an email from him. Might have been yesterday. If it wasn't, it was the day before. And the email says, values works. Client information been deleted. And he sent me the whole email chain. And what happened was he dropped the ball and on some things that he was supposed to be doing for the client. And he wore it instead of doing the, there's another outstanding invoice. And he started walking through all the various factors. None of that came in. And this is what happens with crisis or change. We start to look for what's called the causal effect. This happened, therefore that happened. This was done, therefore it impacted us. This, and we look for that cause and effect. He totally turned the table. And he said, you know what? Regardless of how we got into this position, I will waive the rest of the invoice. I truly apologize for the breakdown in communication. Here's what happened from our end. One of our values is transparency, and I totally apologize for how we dropped the ball and how obviously it has come across to you. I am sorry. I respect your right if we're not the kind of group that you wanted to continue to do business with. Let us know. This client came back and said, appreciate you waiving the other half of the invoice. As for not doing business, you're actually the exact type of business we want to do it, work with. I have actually connected a couple of my other senior directors on this email, and we look forward to following up the work with you.
Yeah.
Earl, it is so refreshing when the person that we meet is the one that was described.
Yeah. Well, you just described, and this is the thing that I talk a lot about too, is the power of ownership, right? You know, a lot of people, and I've talked about this early on. I used to do when I first started the podcast, I wasn't so lucky to be able to get interviews lined up to do shows every week. So I did story time in between, and I shared the Apollo 1 story. Have you ever heard of the Kranz dictum?
No, I have not.
Oh, it's a beautiful story. Well, it's a tragic story, but it's also beautiful with what we're talking about here, because is the following the Apollo 1 mission disaster, where the three astronauts lost their lives because the capsule got engulfed in flames. Gene Kranz was the flight director of that flight. And long story short, immediately after, so that that disaster happens on Friday, Monday morning, he comes into work and he pulls everybody in and he gives them this speech that became known as the Kranz dictum. And the synthesis, the shortened version is, he says, look, he goes, I don't know what the investigations are going to find, but I know what I find. We were at fault. This is where we messed up. These are the things that we did that led to this disaster. And these are the things that we are going to do to ensure that it never happens again. Right. This is like the next business day. Yeah. Well, lo and behold, the report comes down and everything he had already identified were the things that they identified. And he had already fixed everything and made other improvements along the way. And so when they were looking for the proverbial scapegoat, there was none to be found. And always like make this connection there, because think about this for a second. Had he done what most leaders would have done in that situation, you've got loss of life, you've got a really cushy government job, you're in a cutting edge field at the time that's very high profile, because these folks were rock stars at the time, right?
Yeah.
It'd have been very easy for him to be like, okay, let's just see what happens and kind of skirt around it and not hit this thing head on. Had he done that, there's a high likelihood that the Thompson Committee comes back and says, hey, this is where you screwed up. You've done nothing to fix it. You're fired. Yep. Fast forward to Apollo 13. Gene Kranz isn't in the room when those astronauts need his leadership to help them get back home. What happens at Apollo 13?
No.
We don't know. But maybe it doesn't go as great as it did, and maybe we lose those astronauts as well, right? And by what you just said, you know, by hitting it head on, by being transparent, by having integrity, by having ownership, Gene Kranz not only fixed that, got the mission back on track, kept his job, was there for Apollo 13, and we never have to really find the answer to that question.
And one of the things that challenge the listeners is when people blame, we are actually playing the victim card because blaming is a pride issue.
Yeah.
And when pride is in leadership, it doesn't matter what we do. Crucibles eat pride alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's part of why that whole visual of leadership that I describe is shepherds, not ranchers.
Yeah.
Shepherds in front, walking the talk, and they hang out with their people. They get to know them, but their focus is not hanging out with them. The focus is where we are going. Ranchers hang out with people, but their model is driving them in the direction they want them to go.
Yeah.
And so the way I describe a Charlie horse, the way I describe a crisis or a change is I describe it as a Charlie horse. And if any of your listeners have never had a Charlie, physical Charlie horse, I feel really sad for you because you have missed out on. Yeah, exactly. I don't even have the rest of the words to put to that. But most of us have had that coach that says, skate it off, walk it off. You're fine. It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
A good leader doesn't do that kind of garbage. You know, somebody going through a divorce, emotional Charlie horse, relational Charlie horse, depending on their belief system, a moral Charlie horse. And, you know, in the same way a physical Charlie horse can take our head out of the game for the moment, the exact same thing can happen with a psychological or relational or moral or emotional Charlie horse. Doesn't mean there's a problem, but what a golden window for leaders to model responsibility.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You just, see, I'm loving this conversation a lot because you just, it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Are you familiar with the movie Heartbreak Ridge with Clint Eastwood?
Yes. Yeah.
So if you remember, there's the scene with the Hispanic Marine that keeps showing up late to formation.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those of you who haven't seen the movie, it's a very stereotypical Clint Eastwood, you know, no nonsense, grit and, you know, cursing and spitting and slobbering type of character. And he's playing a Marine gunnery sergeant. So you had Clint Eastwood on top of Clint Eastwood playing a Marine. But, you know, there's a powerful scene in there where he keeps getting mad at this guy for missing formation, being late for formation, all this good stuff. But what John just said happens. He finally, like, he tries to find out why, and he realizes, follows this guy, finds out he's living off base. He's got a wife. He's got two kids. He's got all this stuff going on. And instead of just, like, making this guy's life worse, he gives him, like, $200 or $300 and helps him out. And for the rest of the movie, the guy shows up on time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And a responsible leadership is never about who knows what one has done.
Yeah.
They just do it because, you know what? This is how I can help people get their heads back in the game. Let's move along.
Yeah. And I think that is a valuable point there that you just made too, because it reminded me of another point in another parable. It's a Chinese parable. I think that the English translation closest is, well, maybe. Have you heard the well, maybe story?
No.
Okay. So it's about, like,
obviously I haven't lived much. I don't know some of these stories, buddy.
No, it's fine. I just listen and watch way too much crap. I think that's the problem.
It's not Sharknadoes you're quoting. It's all good.
Well, it ties right in with what you're talking about. Cause it's about when you face a crisis, right? Sometimes the crisis is, and sometimes it isn't as bad as you think it is. So the short version of it is there's Chinese farmer. He wakes up one morning, goes out to his field. His horse is gone, right? And for a Chinese farmer at the time, horse, this may as well have been, like, you know, a big John Deere tractor, right? This was his tool of his trade. Well, the villagers come by, they see the horse is gone, and they're like, oh, we're very sorry, your horse is gone. And he just said, they're talking about how terrible of a thing this is for him. He just says, well, maybe. I think that's an odd reaction, like your livelihood just ran away. Well, later that night, horse comes back and's got like three other horses with him. Next day, the villagers come by and they see now all of a sudden this guy's got four horses and they're happy. They're like, oh, this is such a great thing. Now you've got four horses. This is great. And he says, well, maybe. Next day, his son's out and he's trying to break the three wild horses that came back with his horse. And his son falls off and breaks his leg. You know, this is pre-medicine, modern medicine. Viller's like, oh, this is such a terrible thing. Your son has broke his leg. He's going to be lame and all this good stuff. And they're giving all these condolences. And the farmer's like, well, maybe. Next day, war has broken out across China. The Chinese army comes through and they're conscripting all of these young men to go off to war. And his son can't go to war because he's got a broken leg. Right? And so through this series of events, you know, he's had these highs, he's had these lows, he's had these crises, he's had these high points, but everybody else has had this emotional roller coaster, and the farmer has just been like, well, maybe. Let's just see how it plays out.
I'm actually probably going to use that story just as an FYI. And one of the things that you put your finger on is the Serenity Prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr, but it's the AANAGA prayer, and that is change what I can, accept what I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah.
And in order for us to thrive, we have to define what that means. And it doesn't matter to me what game we're talking about in any sports. The minute the experts in the stands, the media, anybody else starts to define what your team should be, Earl, and if you start listening to their definitions, you're already out of your game.
Yes.
And there was a great, I can't remember the name of the book, but they talked about a study of the fear of failure. And they used the study of fourth downs and short. Mm. And they were actually talking about most coaches, even though the odds are in their favor to get the fourth and short, the fear is more of what the stands and the media will say if they don't get it. And to be responsible, to be that kind of leader means, okay, what am I for? And to be fair, you know, if the goal is for more toys, more titles, more possessions, whatever you want me to call that, more trips, that's fine. But don't expect a lot of people to be wanting to be around, because they're just a rung in the ladder.
Yeah.
And to use dark humor, a funeral home director, one of mine once friend said, don't ever forget, John, where there's a will, there's relatives.
I like and, that.
And, you know, and I want people at my funeral for more than my will, which isn't going to be a lot anyways, but it's that investment mindset. Who can I invest what I do really well at? Who can I encourage, even if nobody knows that I'm encouraging them? Who can I come alongside of and say, and kind of, while the critic is whispering in the other ear, I can whisper in their ear saying, you know what? We've got this. It sucks, but we've got this. And reframe that crisis change to be that opportunity. Because if you travel with your family, whoever you are, so in this case, Earl, but if the listeners, if you travel with family or friends, most of the stories that we end up telling come from the trips that are not out of the brochures.
Yeah.
They're the ones that, you know, I was telling a friend, I was doing some training last week, and this person was saying, well, we're looking forward to going to Jamaica. And I said, I've been there. Oh, well, we're looking forward to scuba diving. And I said, no, I've done that. Oh, how'd you enjoy it? And I said, to your comment, Earl, do you want me to tell you the truth, or do you just want me to tell you what you want to hear? No, no, no. Tell me the truth. Well, our dive boat sank. And we were about half an hour, 45 minute boat ride off the shore, off the coast.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And obviously, the fact I'm having this conversation with you means we got rescued. But that process, and what's the stories that we talk about? Not if we had done the perfect dive and everything had gone smoothly, but watching how people unravel on a dive boat. We all had they're called BCs, buoyancy compensators. So right. We could all float. And yeah, it sucked, but we'll figure something out.
Yep. So that whole road less traveled, right?
Road less traveled. You got it. And, you know, my family is more like Griswolds. Like, we watch Hallmarks, but we do not live them.
Love it. Love it. Well, John, that is a great story there. I love that. I mean, that's not necessarily a Hallmark show. That goes back to the Sharknado thing there. But
yeah.
We've been chatting here for about 45 minutes or so here, brother, and then time has just flown by. I'm kind of curious, is there anything we didn't get a chance to touch on that you want to leave listeners with before we close out here?
And we mentioned it, but I'm just going to bring it home, is be the responsible leader that people need you to be. Define what you are for. Define what you want to come out in that hot water teabag moment in those crucibles before we get caught. And know what you're for, because that is the key for you as the listener, for you and I, Earl. That is the key for you and I to finish well.
I like that. I like that a lot. And listeners, take that to heart. That is a great nugget to take away from this conversation, and write that down, post that somewhere in visual range so you can keep that in front of you at all times, because I think that is a great piece of advice. So John, people want to find out more about you, find out more about your services, what you do, maybe have you come talk with their organization. They want to find a copy of Run Toward the Roar. What's a good place for them to do that?
So in reverse order, Run Toward the Roar is on Amazon, and you can get it in a format that works for you. It's Run Toward the Roar, transform crisis and change into the opportunity to thrive. Or you can go to runtowardtheroar.online. For the work that I do is fortlog.co, FORTLOG. Fort, you need a safe place in the frontier. You got to know where you're going. And a log is a journal to help others sail the seas, because there's no point going there alone. .co, because I work with people, colleague, coach, collaborator, and hence the .co. And just shoot me an email, john@fortlog.co. Website is fortlog.co. Landing page for this podcast, fortlog.co/the responsible leadership.
Fantastic. I love that. We'll get those links in the show notes. So those are just a click away for the listeners. And I highly recommend grabbing a copy of Run Toward the Roar. A lot of great input in there. A lot of it we've discussed here, but a lot of it we didn't even touch on. We didn't even get into the ABCs and all that good stuff. So there's a little nugget for enticing you to go get the book to find out what the ABCs are that John talks about. John, I just want to say thank you very much for writing the book, taking on this project, really helping people handle crisis a little bit better. I think that's such valuable work that you're doing. And just thank you for being who you are, doing the work you're doing, and being an outstanding guest on this episode of the Responsible Leadership Podcast.
And Earl, I want to say thank you to you for this kind of work that you're doing, getting people to think about their thinking. But I also want to thank you for being able to answer the question, that non-physical descriptor. And I love the way you used one word. So thank you for that.
Well, all right, folks, there you have it. Another great show about responsible leadership. I really appreciate you listening. And if you have any feedback for me, please reach out at earl@leadershipphalanx.com. That's earl@leadershipphalanx.com. Thank you for rating, reviewing, subscribing, and sharing the show so these messages can spread further and make a bigger impact. With that, I look forward to speaking with you again in the next episode.
Mild, are you ready to record our promo for season 2 of the WannaBet podcast?
David, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Miles, we're not here to quote lines from Airplane. We're here to tell people that season 2 starts August 18th.
But I like Airplane.
I know you do, but WannaBet is a sports betting podcast. Each week we bet $1,000 on the NFL teams and games that we love.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is fun. And last year you picked over 60% of your games correctly.
How'd you do?
We're not talking about that. We are telling people that they can find us every Friday. So no more movie quotes.
Roger, roger.
Electric acid. Electric acid.